Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is Ramsey Dean. Ramsey is the author of a new children's book titled Writing on a Beam of Light. The storybook delivers an unusual history lesson inspired by Albert Einstein's childhood curiosity. Good morning, Ramsey. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio. How are you doing this morning?
Doing good, Johnny. Good morning to you.
Fantastic. It's a pleasure to have you on the air with me. I really like your picture book. Love the awesome illustration and, of course, the storyline as well. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Let's see. Childhood, I grew up, I was born in Springfield, Massachusetts, grew up on Long Island. So I was a big reader when I was younger. I liked to always read books. And I ended up gravitating toward the entertainment business. I kind of, when I got out of college, decided I would either work at a publishing company, a film company, or in the music business. Being right out of New York City, I ended up in the music business. So I've been doing that for some time now. Pursuing my writing at night, writing over the years, I've written screenplays, books, all sorts of things. Had an agent for a while, and then this kind of came about over the last year where I kind of wanted to revisit something, try something new.
When did you discover you have a talent for writing?
I think when I was in probably junior high, teachers would say I write really well, and I would spend a lot of my time writing stories and playing around with ways to think of things and writing dialogue. So it kind of all came together, I think, piece by piece.
Mm-hmm.
A little encouragement, of people saying, hey, you're pretty good at this.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously learning the craft over the years, and then at some point deciding to take it seriously.
Obviously, in order to write, you must have read a lot. So whose writings really inspires you the most?
My parents were big into the classics, so I remember at a young age reading a lot of Hemingway and Tolstoy and, the Gulliver's Travels, the books she would read in school. I kind of read for pleasure in the beginning. And I think as I got older, the more teen kind of books that everybody else was reading.
How has writing developed and shaped you as a person?
I think for me, it's a way to put things in context, sort of be able to take an idea that I have or an opinion and kind of build around it, bolster that really what is a point of view, and then take that and kind of work with it really, develop it for myself. I think that's where my writing comes from.
Do you find yourself daydreaming a whole lot?
Unfortunately, not as much as I used to. having to work and raise a son and having obligations. But, I find myself looking at things through that lens. Really a lot of times when I see things, it's a way to process things that are happening and then why they're happening. And I'm one of those people that always looks for the meaning in things and the metaphor in writing and the bigger, what's the bigger theme here. Probably spend too much time on that, but it's kind of, I try to look for the meaning in things.
Interesting. Are there any family members that are involved in writing as well?
Not so much, no. I wouldn't say anybody's a writer in the family, outside of myself.
What life experiences influence your writing most?
Probably my work. Actually, when I went to college, I was an English major the first 2 years and thought I would be a writer. And I ended up switching to business just because I thought there wasn't really, I didn't really have much to write about. Didn't really have the opinions or the point of view. So I kind of switched and entered the work world. And then oddly enough, when I got into the entertainment business, even though I went into sales and distribution, I ended up being asked to write, will you write a review of this? Will you, you know, write something for this or that? And people said, hey, you're kind of good at this. Can you do more of it?
Yeah.
So I ended up with these, I wouldn't exactly call myself a journalist, but business pieces and reviews of things and industry type stuff that kind of got me a name that way. And then I started to look at it again and said, yeah, well, I could, you know, there is a way for me to connect with this in terms of my ideas, right? Because at that point I had ideas and I had opinions that were developing. So I'd say I, you know, through work, I found an outlet for my my skill.
So do you use your writing as a form of self-expression rather than entertaining others?
Yeah, pretty much. I'd say, you know, over the years, it's been the practice of getting the word out on and being in the music business, we're always talking about, you know, new artists and changes in digital delivery and you know, how to make it in the business, topics like that. So it's an industry rich with opinion and context within the artistic community. So it you know, tends to be more in that and less of a creative process. So I think, you know, in terms of my writing, especially when I wrote screenplays, that was more based on my observations of living in New York and the work world and the corporate world, and then also working with a lot of rock bands and teenagers and youth culture, and then, you know, things, teen trends and things like that that I ended up kind of knowing more about than most teenagers, and I thought were funny because I was, you know, older and then looking at it from a, you know, what is a jaded industry perspective, you know, so I wasn't a part of it, yet I would watch the trends come and go, whether it was heavy metal or alternative or emo or ska. After a while, it kind of, you begin to see the similarities in the youth movements and the characters, and so I got very comfortable writing about younger people and you know, entertainment and that whole kind of thing.
Very interesting, though. I'm looking at a list of artists you have come into contact with. You're talking about from Metallica to Pearl Jam to Nine Inch Nails. As a matter of fact, Marilyn Manson, Snoop Dogg. So how does that affect your writing and the things that you talk about?
That, you know, I would work with a lot of those artists from the early days. So it was more as they were starting out, and I would work at, I have worked at independent record labels, so it tends to be smaller type stuff, indie type stuff. So you kind of get a feel. I'd say my point of view really comes from looking at what is, you know, what we call the customer, the fan, seeing them at the shows and the meet and greets and, you know, their passion toward these artists, and really getting a view of that subculture, which we would, you know, to an extent study as a business, as our target market, you know? So I think, you know, a lot of fun, but you tend to kind of, know more the attributes of these people than, you know, someone normally would, just by, you know, coming in contact with these people at the shows. And then obviously, you know, reading all the press and stories and things that are generated, comments, and then looking at why things work, why things sell, coming up with, you know, there's a lot of the music business, you know, you'll hear about maybe, you know, 1 or 2% of the records that make it. So behind every Nine Inch Nails, there's 20 bands that kind of sounded just like it that, you know, maybe didn't really make it or sort of made it and fizzled.
Very interesting. Were you on a process of, in the sense of personal discovery, a journey to a personal discovery?
Yeah, I think I was. Yeah, I'm not a musician. It's kind of the thing where living an hour outside of New York, on Long Island, I kind of knew my destination was New York City and the arts, and, you know, you know, ideally I kind of saw myself working at a film company, writing screenplays, or publishing company, but I would hang out at rock clubs a lot, CBGBs and the Cat Club and places like that. So I did have a lot of friends that played in bands and were musicians, and I ended up kind of being closer to that business, I would say, and it kind of made a path for itself. And thankfully, it turned out well. I ended up with a few companies that took off quickly. Mm-hmm. And I kind of established myself as a person in that industry of note. Mm-hmm. But I never, made that crossover. I even, as I started to get a name with, companies mm-hmm. like Universal and Sony, I thought maybe I could make that crossover. But I was pegged as a record guy, as a label guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I never really was able to get, it didn't translate into a job at Scholastic or HarperCollins mm-hmm. or New Line or, any of these things I really wanted.
Yeah.
I just kind of ended up staying in the music business, which is fine with me. I still enjoy it and it's fun. And then the writing, I kind of did on my own.
Mm-hmm.
Which looking back on it is good because, mm-hmm. when you're in a certain business, you tend to get a little jaded or sick of it or burnt out on it.
Yeah.
I can't say that I listen to too much music anymore with a fresh set of ears, It's always who is this and who are they affiliated with and what kind of numbers are they doing. So if the one thing it's preserved in my writing is that it's that, that distance, really, where when I write for myself and not so much to, here's what the market's doing and I got to fit into the market and then come up with a bunch of reasons why, technical reasons why I'm not doing better.
Well, that sounds very interesting because it looks like you have two sides of writing. One is for a living, obviously, like you say, because it is a career that you have to write specific things that you observe. And then on the other side, you have an opportunity to just kind of sit back and really look within and just let the creativity comes out and just pen it down on a piece of paper. So having that in mind, what is the most creative work you have done?
The most creative was probably, I like writing on a beam of light. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. the creativity in there and the idea to me, that's like one of the better ideas I've had.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the book itself isn't, huge. It did take a while, it didn't just come mm-hmm. out. It took a while to a lot of revisions there. But I, probably the, I wrote a novel a couple of years ago called The Cool mm-hmm. Kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that took me, it was actually a screenplay I was asked to turn into a book, but the book probably took me a year and a half to write. Just writing, doing the couple pages a day thing. So I really, in terms of immersing myself in a not only a story, but a world and, kind of living with something and watching it develop. That was probably one of the bigger ones, if you asked me
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
step into a world that I know best.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things where I feel like there is an alternate universe, for that I know, which is the world in that book, just because I, through a process of writing, spent so much time there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Interesting. Which is more challenging, writing novels, screenplays, short stories, or sketch comedy?
They all have their challenges.
Mm-hmm.
I think the novel is it's a marathon, so that's its challenge in itself. but sketch comedy can be just as tough because it's somewhat competitive, and you really have to deliver, in with every line, really. Every line matters. There's no real, setup or up and down. It's really punch, punch, punch.
Mm-hmm.
Screenplays, the problem there is you're usually writing for other people. The first draft can be your own idea, but then it kind of, it's not your story. So it's a lot mm-hmm. of working with other people, and it's a collective kind of process, but doesn't always go anywhere. I think that's what's most frustrating about screenwriting is, it's not a movie until it's a movie, and everybody, it's easier to make a movie now, but there's all these other points of validation you need before the screenplay turns into something.
when you write screenplays, and even, I guess, in sketch comedy, do the person that performs the material, do they have any kind of leeway at all to ad-lib sometimes to juice it up when the moment arrives, I guess, in this case? Or is it pretty much everything you hear, it's all scripted?
When I wrote, it was with Second City, which is more about improv, you know, kind of what they're known for, and then what, you know, so we're working with improvs, really. But we would do the, you know, it was like any theater production where we would have a director of the show who would make more the choices regarding, you know, what worked, what didn't work, how to play things. So, yeah, I would say everybody had their input, right? As a writer, you would have to come up with really the idea and the punchlines, and then from there, you're just trying to make it funnier, really. So it's a more fun process. I wouldn't say things changed as much as they evolved when doing a sketch.
Is it more difficult to write comedy?
It is, only because, first you have, for me at least, you have to have a point of view, an idea, and then the actual punchlines to carry it off. That kind of, it's very easy to take really any idea and make any, you know, whether it's a novel, short story, you make an idea about just about anything. But when you go to approach, especially something like comedy, what's that clash of context, and then how does it pay off in terms of conflicts between the characters, and then actual, you know, comedy? I'd say that can take the sometimes the longest time, is making it funny enough to be at that level.
Well, I feel like the good comedies are very engaging, and it really connects with people. Even though it can be short, simple, punchy, but it really connects with people, and that's what I see in your book that you wrote. So let's talk about that. What is the inspiration behind your latest work, Riding on a Beam of Light? It's a wonderful children's book.
That I had always, I have a 12-year-old son, so I've been reading children's books for a long time now. I think like anything, I would read some of the books and say, man, I can't believe somebody would publish that. there's nothing there. Where's the story? You know, how did this get made? Which is the same thing I do when I'm watching a movie sometimes.
Right.
So there was always this voice in me that said, I can do better than that, you know. I should try that. And I had my ideas over the years. I just kind of one of those things where I never really got around to it. I had the idea for Riding on a Beam of Light when I was talking to my son one day. That he had asked me about, he's a budding writer himself. I'd say he takes after me and likes to sketch out comic books and things like that. And he asked me one day, do you think these ideas I have will turn into anything? And so the example I gave him was Albert Einstein, who, you know, had an idea when he was younger, which was writing on a beam of light, and ended up being, you know, one of the ideas that he had that really led him to the Nobel Peace Prize years and years later. So I kind of, you know, pointed that out, and you know, these ideas you're having now with, you know, stories and things like that could be the characters, you know, that you use later on and develop in something that really makes your career, you know, turns into what you do. So it kind of came out of that. And then as we started to talk about what writing on a beam of light was, what it might look like, he was all about it, you know. He was like, you know, kind of like a skateboard, surfboard, you know, how do you do this riding on a beam of light? And as much as I'd show him with the lamp, you know, if you turn the lamp on, you see the beam of light, you don't really see it, but, you know, so you see how the whole thing works. And so we kind of got more talking about that. And then when he, you know, obviously when he asked me, how do you write it, I got to thinking about how, you know, how does this go? You know, what did it look like for Albert Einstein when he thought of it? And, you know, what was going through his head? And, you know, seeing this thing that really, you know, it's around us all the time, you know, lights going on and off, shooting across the room, you just never notice it. just because of, you know, one, its speed, but two, I think, you know, people take it for granted. What, you know, what happens when you turn on a light, you know, light appears. It doesn't so much move from point A to point B. So I thought that was really interesting. And then obviously the, more the, you know, what really drew me to the story was the bigger idea that, children's ideas, you know, have meaning and power and can amount to, you know, big things. So how do we really take that and do what I did with my son and make a message that, yeah, you know, kids are very creative and they're always coming up with things. And I think him at the time being around 10 years old, you know, was starting to look at his childhood and wonder what's, you know, what's real and what's not. And then here I am moving into this next stage, forgetting a lot of the, you know, or leaving behind a lot of the animation and stuffed animals and, you know, the fantasy world that's so rich when you're younger. And questioning, you know, the stuff in his case, what he came up with. So I didn't want him to forget that, you know, that you know, or just dismiss all these ideas as you know, children's folly. So I came up with that, you know. I thought that was a great example, but then, yeah, when we started to talk about it, it started to feel like a story to me, you know, that, that not just, you know, needed to be told within that context, because obviously there's no shortage of books about Albert Einstein, but something that would really, you know, just take that one piece and that one idea and illuminate that.
Interesting. How difficult was it to switch gears and write a children's book?
It was harder than I thought for all my thinking anybody can do that. I kind of played around with it, and it's kind of like any, you know, writing is rewriting. So I kind of wrote it, did some drafts of it, tried to find what I was looking for in terms of the story arc. I mean, the simple idea, you know, riding on a beam of light, but how does he get there and, you know, why and where does it go? So I had to work through a few ideas for the story. I think I always had him kind of, you know, next to a lamp in his bed, kind of, you know, discovering it that way, only because we have the, you know, Einstein placed such an importance on imagination, right, and daydreaming, and I wanted him in an environment where he was dreaming, really, right?
Because, you know,
another thing about him was, that's, he said, that's where I get my best ideas, is just daydreaming, which was another thing I wanted to, you know, bring back to my son, was the importance of, you know, keeping your creative ideas and doing something with them. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of where it started. And then I think I just kind of came up with the character, the idea of his mother being there, and then kind of fleshed it out from there. But that, it didn't really take shape, I think, until I hooked up with the illustrator. And we started to think about slides and, you know, what needed to be, you know, it was almost like I had a version of the story. He had a version of slides around that. And then we started to go back and say, well, you know, how could I make my lines better and how could he make his sketch better to kind of fit? And then we kind of went through this revision of, you know, let's tie everything together and, you know, kind of make the words in the story not just link to each other, but link to each page.
Well, it was very well done. I love the illustration, like I was telling you before we got on the air, and obviously the content as well, because it was very well written. It's simple yet very connecting and very, very engaging from my perspective. How much research did you do before you got into writing this book?
Let's see, the research, I knew enough about Einstein, not enough, but enough to conceive the story. I actually went back and read, Walter Isaacson's Einstein to kind of get the full picture of the man and how things developed through his life. And then really, you know, read what I could about, Einstein in terms of, the Nobel Peace Prize, his theory on special relativity, which is where he pulled in his experience of imagining riding on a beam of light. And then just a lot of his quotes. You know, I've always been a fan of his imagination is more important than knowledge, but he's probably got, you know, 20 other quotes like that. So really digging in on that whole idea of imagination and you know, the power of thinking for yourself and coming up with ideas. So it was fun to study a person historically, you know, which I hadn't really done, and then kind of make sure my story was correct, right? Kind of make sure I wasn't assuming something about a historical figure, and kind of putting it all together that way.
What's interesting is that it is written by you, the father, but yet you use the role of a mother in the book. Is there a reason for it?
I think I connected more with the mother. I mean, just in terms of just because we kind of had him, you know, who would catch him daydreaming? Maybe it was his father. His mother seemed like more of a larger figure in his life. And even though myself, I am, you know, single father, and I sent to bed every night and read him stories, it didn't really, for me, I don't know. It just didn't, it wasn't something I considered. The mother always kind of felt right to me as, you know, maybe my own mother would come in and say, turn off that light.
Right.
She was the parent that told me to do that, so it felt more natural, I would say. But she was the one kind of monitoring whether he was going to sleep or not.
Well, you're using the nurturing aspects of parenting, which was very interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was, you know, something that, I mean, I didn't want him, in terms of connecting with kids, really, right? I wanted them to kind of see it as more, you know, kind of getting back to the idea of nurturing imagination, right? I didn't want him to kind of walk somewhere by himself. I thought it was interesting to have him, you know, with the parent and the parent kind of asking him, what, you know, why are you doing this? And really, because that kind of gets back to the bigger idea, which is, you know, why, you know, are these ideas important? Where do they go, right? And maybe parents read the story and they say, you know, maybe he should daydream a little bit more, right? Maybe it's not so bad. Maybe I shouldn't yell at my kids for not paying attention if they're thinking of, you know, something.
How will your book help parents and their children from that aspect?
I really, you know, I wanted it to speak to that point, right, that there is a value in imagination. And you see, you know, I think there's more of a, I'm not going to call it a renaissance, but, you know, with iPads and the way we consume media and information, there is a lot of this outside stimulation that it's not often that we'll take the time to reflect internally and kind of just think. Without anything prompting us, right? Without a phone or something in there, you know, shooting information at us. So I like that, you know, that he was just there and thinking and, you know, just by himself. And then really I intentionally didn't make it too historical in a way. I think that's kind of been done, and there is a, you know, that's almost his own genre of children's books, so I didn't want to venture into that. And I really want, you know, I want it to be more about the meaning and the story, that the moment, so much than anything else. So I thought using a historical figure like that was a great way to illustrate something that really, you know, maybe kids don't do enough of today, you know, imagining or maybe thinking that, you know, because the, you know, the world is kind of growing in this more technological and you know, kind of you know, data driven way, that you know, just thinking up ideas and creating things you know, is less important than, you know, learning how to write code or something like that.
I believe your book come across from a supporting role for the parent. I mean, even though you're there to provide the child with all the information, but yet the imagination comes from the child, and then you're there as a supporting role in explaining it's okay to imagine, it's okay to think about this, to think about that, and let's see how far we can take it, versus their parents out there, let's flood the kids with all this information and then in some ways force feed the kids on certain things. I may be wrong at this, but that's what I sense, and that's what I like about your book in terms of, like, okay, as a parent, I'm not thinking a whole lot, but you're thinking about it. Gee, now you're engaging me to pry into more about what you're thinking and go forward. And that leads us to the understanding, as you mentioned, in some ways, about grasping the power of the children's imagination. Why do you think that's important?
I wanted to kind of do something that, you know, I didn't think, the age the book is aimed for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't really need to know the theory of relativity or anything about physics. It's really more about people, right? And self-fulfillment, really, and, you know, doing what you want to do when you grow up, which is really, I think those are more nurturing ideas.
Right.
That there's always a lot of, you know, especially now, there's a lot of pressure to, you know, do good in school, get into good schools, and, you know a skill, get a head start, all these things so I kind of wanted to keep the book kind of free of all that and really free of, you know, if a parent wants to, do science or just science or fun experiments on, you know, light, you can play around with a light. If you want to go read Wikipedia about Albert Einstein, you can do that. So I kind of wanted to put the conversation in their hands, leave it open enough where it is it's a simple idea, and there's enough where you could, you know, you could keep going back. So if a child just found out who Albert Einstein was and found out that he was kind of just like him, right, that can be all it needs to be. And if they're interested in learning more about it or having that discussion about you know, light and fun stuff like that, and then obviously matter and the bigger things. And then maybe when they do get into, you know, fifth grade, sixth grade, there is a point of reference, right?
Yeah.
Kind of lead them to this one figure that has some connection to them in their lives, you know.
Well, it's a wonderful foundation that you have created.
That was my idea, was just to create a foundation, you know. I didn't... Well, the book itself is short, and I kind of aimed for, you know, how long is a book do I like, having read so many of them.
Yeah.
Some books are too long, some books are too short. I wanted to come up with something that was the right length, but then, obviously, like I said, created a conversation afterwards. So it wasn't just, the puppy ran under the fence, and then he got home. Books like that, you know, you can go through stacks of them as a parent, and there's not much there. And then there's others, you know, the ones that stick with you are usually ones that you end up talking about and become part of your life. So in terms of thinking about a book, kids might, you know, my greatest hope was to have a book that kids would remember, you know, read to their own kids and say, hey, this was one of my favorites, or one that I actually remember, you know, to be remembered out of what could be, you know, hundreds or, you know, stacks of books. To me, that would be the greatest, you know, greatest gift of all.
Right. Well, what you did was you create something that's teaching the kids about everyday living rather than, say, fantasizing about a prince or a princess or an animal character out there, which is kind of a fantasy situation. But this is real life, real situation, very pragmatic about the things that we are exposed to every day. But it's kind of fun to pursue it from a curiosity standpoint of view. How does this thing happen or exist within our everyday living, I guess?
Sure. I thought it's, you know, something that we do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as parents, it's something that we struggle with. Because, you see your kids performing in school and wonder if they're left-brained or right-brained or if everything's going to turn out all right. And a lot of that's what I liked about Einstein is, you know, he was a slow starter academically, socially. And, you know, that's, you know, people often like to say he didn't speak till he was 4 years old and, you know, this whole thing. Which, you know, as a parent, yeah, it's somewhat comforting that your kid is going to catch up. But at the same time, you know, the pressure really shouldn't be there to catch up if they're, you know, if they're embracing their own interests, right, what they like. That's, you know, that's taking them toward happiness, which is really, I think, you know, any of us really want. You know, there's somebody who's a happy artist than a miserable lawyer, you know.
Interesting. What three things can parents do to stimulate their children's critical thinking?
Let's see. Well, read the book, first of all. it was more heavy. I think it's more about having those discussions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Critical
mm-hmm.
thinking, I mean, comes out of conversation, I think. And I noticed this with my own son mm-hmm. as he grew up. Was, you know, the more they get into videos, TV, games, iPads, the less they converse and the less there is a... you know, an exchange of ideas or building on their own ideas. They're kind of in this vacuum, you know, getting this information feed, which a lot of times you're not tied into, right? A lot of times when a kid is on an iPad with a set of headphones, you don't really know what's going on there. So there's really nothing to discuss afterwards. So it was really about creating, you know, moments that have conversations attached to them. I think that's probably the biggest thing. Which really comes from, you know, doing things, what we call offline now, right? You know, taking a kid to the beach or the amusement park or on a drive and, you know, creating your own memories, really. I think that in itself, you know, kind of creates that engagement.
You have an autistic son. Do you find
yeah.
that because of his situation that you're spending more time with him because other parents are not spending as much time in some ways? When I say time in terms of paying attention, what's interesting about your book is that it has nothing to do with your son's ability, but it's more of creating that opportunity for stretching their imagination. And that's what I like about it, because it's got nothing to do with a child in general, but it's more about the parent paying attention, being attentive, and making the connection like you just said.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, there was it wasn't the intention in the beginning, but there is mm-hmm. kind of a message to parents in there that kind of grew out of it as
yeah.
it came to fruition, which was, you know, embrace your children's creativity, really, right?
Right, yeah.
We tended to kind of, you know, mark this stuff as, oh, this is, you know, screwing around drawing comic books, and this is schoolwork. You need mm-hmm. to do more schoolwork, right, if you want to get ahead.
Right.
But a lot of times, you know, when kids are, you know, my son has this obsession with, you know, writing about movies. So he'll sit there all day and write about movies in his own world. But at the same time, you know, it's not schoolwork, and he'll do this at school, and, you know, it's not. But at the same time, with you know, you have to look at it for what it is. If his handwriting is getting better, if he's, you know, in his own mind organizing data and seeing a taxonomy and you know, putting pieces together, there's a lot of value in that, you know. It doesn't have to be this rote memorization that, you know, most of what we have still in the academic world is. If, you know, if somebody's pursuing what is, you know, a brain-building exercise, right?
Right.
Especially if it's something they're doing on their own, then I, you know, I try to encourage that, right? Or mm-hmm. not get in the way of it, I should say.
Yeah.
Actually, encouraging it is the wrong word, because if I'd encourage it, he wouldn't do it.
What do you enjoy most about writing on the beam of light?
I think the idea, you know, as a writer, it was one of those mm-hmm. ideas where I kind of said, oh, this is going to be a good one. Kind of
yeah.
like, you know, right at the beginning, I was like, this is great. I have to go do this, because, and that's, you know, as writers, you know, there are some ideas that you get, like, this is really good, and, you know, here's a few other ideas that'll make it even mm-hmm. better. But this, I kind of, when I had the idea of itself of mm-hmm. the actual riding on a beam of light and how that, mm-hmm. that translates to, you know, riding on scooters and, you know, really the joyful moments of childhood, mm-hmm. like, this is going to be good. I just got to figure the whole thing out. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of one of those things where I was excited to, you know, have that light shine on me and have something good come, which, you know, as a writer, they can be few and far between, as much as you try and, you know, get the ideas and release the ideas and find something, you know, new and
yeah.
original and fun. So I think for me, it kind of, you know, when it happened, it was one of those really motivating moments where I kind of said,
mm-hmm.
you know, I have to make this one happened, you know, this one has to happen. How am I going to do it?
How did you select your illustrator for the project?
More coincidence, the illustrator is my cousin's son. He was an illustrator, younger, just got out of school, has been doing, you know, some work, actually looking for a job, and part of why he came to, my cousin came to me, was having connections in entertainment. He said he's really interested in Pixar and Disney and, you know, that kind of animation. You think you could, you know, send him over to one of your friends at one of these companies. And I don't have friends at those companies, which is the weird thing. and I said, I'll do what I can. You know, if something comes up, great. And then he called me to say thanks. And I kind of said, if you know, if you like illustrating, because I know he's a freelance drawer first, and then he went to school to kind of learn the digital craft and the graphic design. I said, if you want to, you know, if you want something for your portfolio, I have this book idea that I've been working on for a while. You know, check it out. And then being a 20-something, I kind of forgot about it. And about 2 months later, he said, here, I got it. And he kind of plopped down, you know, the whole book as he saw it written out with all the rough sketches and everything. And that's where he said, wow, this, you know, this is a book. You know, you kind of went and took the initiative, did everything, you know, surprised me. So I said, all right, great. Let's get serious about this. And, you know, much the way I think that's where my work skill came in, much the way I manage a project or a release. And, all right, we're going to, you know, make this all happen and do it this way and, you know, release it ourselves. Part of the, you know, what I do in music is putting stuff out there and, you know, working with Walmart and Best Buy and Target. So I'm familiar with distribution models. So technically it was easy for me, not easy, but familiar to me to put it out. And we were able to come up with something that really, you know, he was able to do his thing as an artist. I was able to do mine as a writer. And then, you know, wearing that business hat, I was able to do everything that the book needed at the time.
Right. Well, I mean, like I was telling you in the beginning, the illustration is just fantastic. No question about it. He's very talented. And again, it's just very vibrant. It's very engaging. And I think that makes a big difference too in a children's book, because it's not so much sometimes a story. It has to engage the child. And your book is very engaging.
Right.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's what I liked about him is, you know, the younger kids grow up with anime and things like that, that is obviously a lot richer in detail than, you know, I was used to with, you know, Richard Scarry and things like that. There's a whole different style there that, you know, and this is more speaking to the, you know, the stuff you see more with teenage artists. That's you know, a lot of different styles mixed together. But it's got a different look and feel than the traditional, you know, children's book author. And at one time I went, you know, I went looking for an children's book illustrator. And it was all, you know, not to be negative, but it was, you know, it looked very familiar to me, right? So I looked at it and I was like, eh, you know, is it the watercolors or the pastel or, you know, the kind of simple drawings? And which, you know, being in the music industry, there's things that where you stick with things that work. But, you know, I guess me being from the, you know, rock and roll background, when I saw his stuff, I was like, this is a little bit different, you know, and it's kind of cool. And I think it's going to be, you know, if anything, interest the, you know, the parents who were in their late 20s, 30s, right? They're the ones having kids now that were teenagers 10 years ago, that this is going to look more, you know, more about their childhood or familiar to them than, you know, the 40-year-olds.
Right. Fantastic.
So yeah, we decided to take a chance there and then, you know, really kind of over deliver on the illustration.
Well, you certainly did. Will writing A Beam of Light grow into a series of books?
Possibly. It was, you know, as we were doing it, we're like, this is such a good idea. The way it kind of, you know, breaks something down that's, you know, infinitely complex, more complex than, you know, even I understand or most people. But it takes this complex idea about this, you know, very intelligent person and just takes a piece of it, right, and kind of explains it to what would be, you know, the you know, 2 to 8-year-old in a way they can really enjoy it, you know, I'd say is the main thing. So then we did toy around with the idea of, you know, maybe there's other characters, historical figures, I should say.
Yeah.
Maybe there's more on Einstein. you know, just kind of different ideas. But, yeah, that's part of why, you know, we thought maybe, you know, I mean, Einstein had a lot to say that came out of his childhood. So maybe there's more ideas there. And we like the character, you know, we made a shirt,
right,
you know, and
right.
all this. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to play around with more of that, I'd say more of the character, you know, maybe
mm-hmm.
doing not so much a movie, but, you know, we did a little
yeah.
movie online. We did a Kickstarter thing a while ago.
Right.
Something like that, and then just playing with the image itself.
Wonderful. Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
The book, well, we have our own site, which is writingonabeamoflight.com. So you can always go there and get all the latest information, and we also have a blog up there, which goes through, we did a lot of playing around with the speed of light, right? How long does it take to get across the room? How long does it take to get from the sun to the earth? Fun stuff like that on the site. And then, you know, it's available on Amazon, where you can buy it digitally and in the good old, you know, physical format. It's on iTunes, and then it's, you know, it's getting out there into a number of other
mm-hmm.
carriers.
Mm-hmm. And your site is kid-friendly, right?
Yeah, I did it myself, so everything there mm-hmm. is kid-friendly.
Wonderful.
And I wrote it more as a parents and kids kind of activity
mm-hmm.
site.
Right.
So not so much that it's a site stare at and hang out on. There's more activities and discussions around the book, right?
Right.
Things that you can, because I really, you know, like I said, I wanted the book to be a conversation. So how can you as a parent, you know, get that conversation going?
How has writing A Beam of Light impacted you personally?
Personally, maybe a better parent, I would say. it was one of those things where really in focusing on the message I was trying to get across,
yeah.
I kind of meditated on that for a bit and, you know, mm-hmm. thought about it. So I really started to kind of, you know, focus on that and my son's own imaginings. And, you know, he tends to daydream a lot and, you know,
mm-hmm.
obviously write a lot. And then, yeah, I'd say it made me more tolerant of that. I wouldn't say tolerant, but kind of more nurturing in that way. You know, if he's doing something, kind of let him do it. If it's a creative, you know, pursuit, right?
Yeah.
Encouraging that creativity. So I'd say that's where it kind of, you know, reconnected me to that whole idea.
Interesting. Do you have any advice for aspiring writers, artists, and storytellers who are listening this morning?
My main advice, which I kind of took from the music business, was, you know, have a hit song, right? Have one thing
yeah.
that's undeniably great rather than 10 things that are just okay.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, you know, when I got this idea, like I said, I kind of felt like I had my idea. I've got a whole book of ideas, you know, for books.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all in, you know, various stages. It's a kind of a big mess, but when I came across this one, I kind of thought, wow, there's, you know, there's an idea I can run with. And it did take a long time. It took almost a year to do that book.
Uh-huh.
And it developed into what it was. But, you know, the two things were, look for that great idea, right? Look for that thing that you think is your own hit. And then obviously, you know, keep developing it. Like I said, that the first draft of that book or even the idea of that book doesn't resemble what it is today. So you
mm-hmm.
kind of have to be open to really be open to change. You know, a lot of writers get something, an idea, and this is the way it is because I thought it up. In your own mind, you have to be open to change your own work, rewriting it, reinventing it, really, in order to kind of make it work sometimes or find an audience. You know,
mm-hmm.
sometimes it's better to rewrite something than to just put it in a drawer and forget about it. So, and I've done both. It's a creative process. A lot of times you're done with an idea. You know, I've had screenplays that I've written that
mm-hmm.
I went back and forth with people for, you know, a good 2 years. And at some point I kind of creatively said, well, I'm done with this. You know, I can't do a 20th rewrite. You know, it's in my mind, it's been done and redone and
yeah.
I can't make it any better. or I can't make it into, you know, this mythical thing that you want.
Right.
And that's where, you know, you have to enjoy the writing itself. If you don't actually enjoy doing it, right, it's not something you go home and think about doing after work. it's kind of, yeah. You know, right, if you're a writer, you know, or when you do write is when you have to write, right?
Yeah.
Some people more, some people less. But when, you know, when the motivation's there to actually tell something and get a point across and, you know, you can visualize, you know, that final outcome. That's when it's fun, you know, when you're really working towards something for yourself, you know, not so much, I want to get a publishing deal, you know, or
right.
I want to sell books. It's really when you think, oh, I could, you know, this is something I can do and I can finish it and I can be proud of it.
Wonderful. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Recipe for living. I wouldn't say it's my own recipe, but I used to, actually for my work, I would teach now and then or give lectures at colleges and whatnot. And there was one quote, which you can hear from Oprah or Tony Robbins and a number of other people, which I don't have in front of me, but it's pretty much, you know, it's pretty much when, you know, all your hard work, your preparation and your, you know, tenacity and everything come together, that's kind of what the, you know, that's when success happens. So, you know, what I boiled it down to was three words, prepare for fate. So I have that at home. I wrote it, prepare for fate. And each day I kind of think to myself, right, that, you know, if I really want to be a writer, how do I prepare for this? Right. How do I prepare for that opportunity when, you know, my cousin calls and says, hey, my kid wants to illustrate a book. Right. I would have to have that idea. You know, I would have to have gone that far with my own personal journey to have that. And the same with, you know, with, you know, job interview or anything, you know, it's really things don't just happen. You know, you realize this when you get older and nobody, you know, just kind of, you know, wins the lottery. You have to buy a lottery ticket first. Right. So it's about preparing, you know, it's about doing the work for that want. Right. There's this idea of fate. Oh, I want to be famous. But, you know, what sort of thing are you doing in your daily life to really, you know, to be there, to be ready when that moment happens? So that's kind of, you know, you know, as long as I'm in my own mind, you know, preparing for that moment or really, you know, ready, that's all I can hope for, you know.
That's fantastic. I really like that because what you're telling us is we have to be ready at all times and we can't be waiting for opportunity. We just be ready for opportunity. And when it strikes, we're ready to go. So
yeah.
That's fantastic.
I think when you're ready to, receive opportunity, right? I mean, as tough as it is, you can't make, you know, a lot of times you can't make it happen as much as we want the phone to ring or, you know, want somebody to say, yes, this is great. Doesn't always happen, but then, you know, sometimes it does, right? And then you kind of have to have your, whatever your calling card or your pitch is, you know, whatever you're doing, kind of ready to go.
Right. That's fantastic. Ramsey, thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Dr. Murray Pasinski of Harvard Medical School. A renowned brain expert, Dr. Pasinski is dedicated to increasing public awareness concerning the importance of adopting a brain-healthy lifestyle, as our brain is, after all, the true source of our vitality and happiness. Dr. Pasinski and I will be discussing how we can redesign and energize our brain at any age. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Ramsey, thank you again and have a blessed day.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you. Bye-bye.